Darkcast Network, the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
Everything was going Kiara Coles' way. She had a good paying job with the United States Postal Service. She had just bought a car and she had gotten her own apartment that she was sharing with her boyfriend. They had even decided to start a family. In October of 2018, Kiara was 3 months pregnant and loving life. But one day, Kiara disappeared. What followed was an investigation that offered up more questions than answers, including a last sighting that may not have been the last time she was seen at all. Kiara's family is still searching for her and her unborn child, and they are asking for her story to be told. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Kiara Coles. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining us once again. Now, this week's story is so shocking because it's nearly identical to the very last episode that we did, which was an update on Akia Eggleston.
Yeah, I mean, obviously she's pregnant, so I was getting those same vibes.
Yeah, she is a young Black pregnant woman who went missing under very similar circumstances. And, you know, I wrote this and I've been planning this episode before we got the big news about the arrest in Akia's case.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's a complete coincidence that we were doing this episode this week.
I don't believe in coincidences.
But no, I'm really happy because, like, you know, as soon as the Akia news came, I was like, okay, now do Kiara, meaning like we got an arrest there. Like, let's get an arrest of this one too. Like I said, they were both young Black women. They were in their 20s. They were both pregnant and they were both in complicated relationships and made large ATM withdrawals right before their disappearance. And in both cases, there's a pretty clear suspect who acted suspiciously after their disappearance. But before we get started, we'd like to take a quick moment to thank the lovely folks who have joined us over on Patreon. So thank you very much to Marie M., Rachel C., Madison L., Bob J., and Akira W.
And I know two of them.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, Marie M. and Madison L.
Oh, I thought
those
they
are
oh,
coworkers of mine. So yeah. Shout out to you guys. They also the two that I know of that purchased some of our merchandise.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And you sent me pictures. So we'll have to post that on our socials.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you would like to join us and get these episodes early and ad-free, along with Ethan's show about mental health, you can do so at patreon.com/attwgpod. But let's get to Kiara Coles' story. Kiara Michelle Coles was born on September 24th, 1992, to Karen Phillips and Joe Coles. She was the fourth of five children. Karen and Joe eventually divorced, and Joe moved to Racine, Wisconsin. Like I mentioned in the intro, Kiara had goals for her life, and they were pretty domestic. By 2018, all four of Kiara's siblings had children, and Kiara, who was a devoted aunt, very much wanted to be a mother. But she knew she had to get things in order before she did that. So she ended up getting a job with the United States Postal Service. She bought a new car and she got an apartment with her longtime boyfriend, Josh Simmons. The couple, who had been together for about 6 years by this point.
6 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, long time. Decided that they were ready to start a family. So when Kiara found out that she was pregnant in the summer of 2018, she was thrilled. Now, her boyfriend, Josh, was a little bit older. He was in his 30s and had actually been working for the Postal Service himself for a number of years. Now, I haven't explicitly found this in any of my source material, but I imagine that he's part of the reason why Kiara ended up getting a job there.
I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah. So I don't know if she was full-time at the USPS yet, because she was also working as a Lyft driver to make some extra money at the time. Again, even though he was a little bit older, Kiara's family liked Josh. Karen, her mom, told NBC5 Chicago, quote, "He just had manners, never raised his voice. I always gave him the benefit of the doubt," end quote. You know, that quote might seem a little weird. Like, what does she mean by giving him the benefit of the doubt? Like, that's kind of a weird thing to say about your daughter's boyfriend.
Was this a quote after she went missing?
Yes.
Oh, well, okay. So that kind of explains it.
Kind of. But also, Josh's relationship with Kiara wasn't exactly straightforward. So not only was he older, he also had a past to go with his age. Some of it was totally normal. Like, he had a daughter from a previous relationship. I don't know her exact age, but I did see a photo. And I would guess that she was maybe around 8 or 9 years old at the time all of this was happening. And apparently the girl's mother actually gave Josh custody, so he was raising her. And of course, like I said, that in and of itself is not strange or scandalous or anything. That's just life.
Yeah.
But Josh wasn't exactly a single father trying to make it work. He had help from his longtime girlfriend, but not Kiara.
Okay.
Yeah. Josh was also in a relationship with another woman, Kiara Smith.
How did he keep them that straight?
Yeah, I know. Very difficult.
Kiara and Kiara?
Uh-huh.
I'm confused just talking about it now.
Yeah, and I am just guessing it's pronounced Kiara based on the spelling K-I-A-R-A, but I've heard people refer to her as Kiara. So, like, they could have been both named Kiara. I'm not actually entirely sure. So I'm just, for the sake of us, like, keeping it all this straight, I'm going to call her Kiara because, to my knowledge, that's how you actually pronounce it. So not only, though, was Kiara helping Josh raise his older daughter, but the couple had another daughter of their own who, based on that photo that I saw, I would have guessed to be about 5 or 6.
So she was born in the time that he and Kiara were dating.
Yeah, right about the time they got together.
Okay.
Oh, and Kiara also works for the Postal Service.
Did they know about each other?
Yeah, much like Akia's story, this is not a case of a man living a double life. Everybody was aware of everybody else.
Complicated.
Yes. Now, back in 2018, when all of this information was first becoming public after Kiara's disappearance, there were a lot of Facebook comments and web sleuth posts saying that Josh was living a double life. But again, that really did not seem to be the case. It sounds like everybody knew about each other pretty much the whole time, including Kiara's family.
Hmm.
Now, that's not to say this was some sort of like sister wives situation or like something that everybody was cool with. Because from what I've been able to gather, Kiara and Kiara did not get along. And apparently Kiara had been banned from coming to Kiara's house. The two also got into a physical altercation at one point. It was described as a fist fight, which I imagine is what led to the banning.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so we are definitely not talking about a happy polyamorous relationship here. We are talking about some sort of arrangement that did not make all of the parties happy.
Hmm.
There was a lot of tension, and that tension had a huge reason to grow in the weeks and days leading up to Kiara's disappearance.
And just, we're sure that it wasn't just an ex situation. Like, they were both actively dating him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Very much so. But again, I am piecing this all together. So I do not know the ins and outs of their relationship. Obviously, sure. That's between them. Like, you know, right. Nobody really knows except for the people involved. But what I do know is that Kiara and Josh had been together for years, but Josh and Kiara had been together longer. Now, this arrangement that they had does seem to have been accepted by Kiara on some level, because again, like, he wasn't living a double life. Kiara knew about Kiara, and she decided to stay with Josh. In the intro of the episode, I mentioned that Josh and Kiara got the apartment together, and that is like what I read in news reports right after her disappearance, you know, so that she had just moved into this apartment with her boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. They were having a baby. But I don't actually know how accurate that is, because if anything, like, maybe he was living there part time, but it does seem as though he primarily resided with Kiara and their children.
Interesting.
So while these relationships had been going on for a while, the apartment was a relatively recent turn of events. I believe prior to this, Kiara had been living with her family. But again, she was getting ready to make big changes in her life, and she was striking out on her own and getting this car and the job, which she had just started working for the Postal Service in 2017. It was all part of her plan. And it sounds like her plans very much included Josh. I don't know if she was thinking that he was going to leave Kiara or like how that was all supposed to play out. But regardless of her plans, there was a huge wrench in whatever they were, because Kiara was also pregnant. Ever lie down after a long day only to toss and turn, wishing for a better night's sleep? I've been there too. I'm terrible at sleeping. And after a while, it really makes you just question all of your life decisions, including the mattress that you're sleeping on. Maybe that's the culprit. March is Sleep Awareness Month, and so I want to talk to you about Avocado Green Mattress. You've probably heard of them. They're the mattresses that are made with organic and natural materials. All of Avocado's mattresses are crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton, ensuring a safe, healthy sleep environment free from harmful chemicals and toxins. Their mattresses also promote better sleep through breathable, naturally temperature-regulating material. Whether you like a firm mattress, a plush mattress, they've got you covered. You can even take a mattress quiz to see which mattress and comfort option is right for you. And you can rest assured that you made the right choice, because they offer sleep trials up to 1 year and generous warranties so that you have your peace of mind. Plus, they have easy financing options with Affirm, so there's just really no reason not to take control of your sleep. Avocado mattresses are better for you, better for the planet. Head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better. Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right, it's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey everyone, it's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how the changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep, can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The True Age test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code ATTWG
to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
Oh, so how many kids would that make? Four?
Yeah.
Two unborn, of course.
Right, right, but, yes.
Okay. Just trying to keep it all straight.
Yeah. So Kiara and Josh had been raising Josh's daughter from a previous relationship. They had their own daughter, and then Kiara and Kiara were pregnant with Josh's baby at the same time in 2018 when this was all happening.
Wow.
I don't know how far along Kiara was at that time. I just knew they were both pregnant at the same time. So I don't know if Kiara knew about this. I don't know the timing of all of that. And I'm not entirely sure how long Kiara herself had known that she was pregnant, because she was actually pretty early on in her pregnancy. News reports differ. She says she was about 2 to 3 months pregnant. Her mother, Karen, said that she had spoken to her daughter the week before she went missing, and she was excited because she had just heard her baby's heartbeat for the first time. And typically that happens at your very first prenatal appointment. Again, it is, of course, possible that it didn't for some reason, or that Kiara had taken a home test as much as like a month or so prior, because, you know, it can be really hard to get that first prenatal appointment.
Yeah.
And sometimes make you wait a long time. So she could have known that she was pregnant for quite a while before she actually got to the doctor for the first time. We don't know that exact timeline. But again, regardless, she was only 2 to 3 months pregnant. And the exact timeline is definitely something that's missing in this case. In fact, the day she was last seen has been misreported for years.
Really?
Yeah. Early reports stated that Kiara was last seen in person on Tuesday, October 2nd, 2018. She was the type of person who was always in contact with her family and generally very easy to reach. She was also extremely active on social media, especially Snapchat and Instagram. And it wasn't just posting. She used the messenger functions on those, on all the social media apps, like constantly. So like that's how she communicated with her, a lot of her friends and things like that. So on October 2nd, Kiara was hanging out with a friend, but then had to leave to go to a WIC appointment. And for those of you who may not know, WIC is...
Were you going to answer that based on my look? Because I was about to ask what a WIC appointment was.
Well, yeah, I did see your look, but then I realized, like, yeah, because we do... Hey, listen, we've got international listeners, so cool. I'm sure they wouldn't know.
I mean, I'm a domestic listener and I don't know what WIC is.
WIC is basically it's like, part of it is like food stamps and things like that, but it's more than that. The WIC part of it specifically is for women with children. And so they provide, again, like prenatal care, they provide classes, they provide all sorts of, you know, help for pregnant women and women who have given birth.
Gotcha.
But it is like a government program.
Sure.
I haven't been able to find out if she made it to that appointment or not, but Karen said that she spoke to Kiara on the phone that day and everything seemed to be fine. But then she tried to call Kiara the next day on October 3rd, but couldn't reach her. And she continued to try to call, but her calls started going straight to voicemail. And at first, she just assumed that Kiara's phone was dead. But when she still couldn't get in touch with her that evening, she began to worry. Because it's one thing for Kiara to let her phone die, but like she wouldn't let it stay dead.
Yeah, I feel like nobody does.
Well, exactly. Anymore. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, okay, you can't reach her for a while. Like in a few hours, you should be able to get in touch with her. On October 4th, the next day, she called police and asked them to do a welfare check. Kiara's sister then also contacted Josh to see if he had heard from her or knew where she was or what was going on. Police arrived at Kiara's apartment on October 4th, but no one was home. However, Kiara's car was parked out front, though I don't think the police would have necessarily known that, because this is Chicago. Her car was just parked on the street out front, so it's not like it was in a driveway or a reserved parking space or anything like that.
Right.
And I don't even know if at that point they knew like what kind of car she drove or anything like that.
Yeah, they might not have had that information on the initial report if
it was just a welfare check. Yeah. It sounds like once they found out that she wasn't home, then her family went over and her family saw the car.
Right. And do we know what Josh had said to her sister?
No, they never said specifically, but I mean, I don't think he said that he had seen her. Like, I don't think he had a story or anything. Yeah, no, I don't think he gave her any information. So her family was able to go into her car. Her keys, where her keys have been kind of like initially it was reported that her keys were gone. And then a later report said that they were in her apartment. So I don't know if like somebody in her family had a spare key to the apartment and that's how they're able to get in and then get the keys to her car. But somehow they were able to get into her car. And inside they found her purse, which did not have her wallet in it, but did have her debit card. They also found her cell phone, her prenatal vitamins, and the lunch she had packed for work. And this was obviously very disturbing because these are not items you would just leave behind. So her family called the post office to see if she'd been into work. Now, according to Karen, they said that Kiara had taken personal days on October 1st and 2nd and called in sick on the 3rd. So she had apparently not been to work all week because the 1st was Monday. At this point, Kiara's family was able to file a missing persons report with the Chicago PD, and they did begin an investigation. It doesn't, however, seem like it was treated with much urgency. Despite the fact that she was pregnant and had also left her asthma inhaler behind in her apartment, they initially treated it as her just walking away.
I mean, I get it. She's an adult, but she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
That should increase the urgency.
Yeah. With no car and she left her emergency inhaler behind.
Right.
So again, I don't know how well or if at the beginning they searched her apartment, her car, or her phone.
Yeah, but in theory you said that, or you said maybe somebody had a key to the apartment.
Yeah, I think the family did.
Right. So, I mean, like if there was blood or a sign of struggle in there.
Oh, for sure. There definitely wasn't anything like crazy in the apartment that concerned anyone.
Right.
Yeah, definitely not. But, you know, what I do find concerning in terms of the integrity of the investigation and any potential evidence is that I saw news clips of her family handling the items that they found in the car and showing them to reporters. You know, like there was a news clip of like they're holding open her purse, they're showing her phone, like all of this stuff. So like nothing, you know, I don't think the police like took anything into evidence or anything like that.
Well, the family might have taken that out of the car beforehand.
Oh, yeah. No, they definitely did. Yeah.
So
because the family was the first one to go into the car. And this was before the missing persons investigation began.
Right.
Like, and yeah, because everything they found in the car is what led them to file that report.
Right. So the evidence was already, I mean, if there was any evidence there, it already would have been compromised.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I just don't know if they searched the car after that, right? And did like a deeper dive than, you know, the family would have done. Local news did begin to cover Kiara's case, though. Regina Waldrop, who was a reporter for NBC Chicago, was in Kiara's Chatham neighborhood knocking on doors and looking for leads. While she was doing that, a neighbor called down to her and delivered what appeared to be the first major break in the case, a video of Kiara from the morning of October 3rd.
How did this neighbor have this video?
It was just like a security camera that they had at their house.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if it was like a Ring doorbell, you know, but it was something. It was like something normal and not weird.
I mean, the way it was described, it sounded pretty weird.
Yeah, no, I did not mean to. Totally normal camera. So this video from the neighbor's surveillance camera appeared to show Kiara at 11:45 a.m. on October 3rd. She was walking down the street dressed in her postal uniform. She walks toward her car, passes by it, and then goes off camera. So when Waldrop, the reporter, saw that, she's thinking, okay, like, this is great. So Kiara must have gotten into somebody else's car, and maybe we can find another surveillance video, like, down the street that caught that. You know, like, she's like, we're going in a direction. Like, this is right? Yeah. But it was interesting because, you know, on one hand, Kiara being in her postal uniform makes sense because they found the packed lunch and her prenatal vitamins and her purse and everything in her car that would indicate she was planning on going to work. However, according
she called off of work.
Exactly.
Called in sick.
So why would she have been wearing her uniform that day?
Mm-hmm.
This video was immediately shown on the news, and a still from it was put on Kiara's missing persons poster. When you look up news articles on Kiara's case, as I obviously did in order to write this episode, the majority of them say that Kiara was last seen on surveillance video on the morning of October 3rd. Karen, as you can imagine, watched this video over and over again, just trying to figure out like any clues as to what happened to her daughter. She went to sleep with it on her phone next to her, but something just didn't sit right with her. The video was from far away, and it wasn't the best quality, but Kiara is her daughter. She knows her. And she didn't think that the woman on the video was Kiara.
Hmm.
According to Karen, the woman on the video did not walk the same way Kiara did. And while she did look close to her physically, she says that Kiara, who was about 5'4" and 125 pounds at the time of her disappearance, was a little bit shorter and a little bit smaller than the woman on the video.
Is she thinking it's Kiara?
So, you know, what's interesting, I don't know if Karen was thinking that or not, but one of the things that I was taking a look at when I was writing this episode was the Web Sleuths forum on this case, which is like 48 pages long or something. And people on the forum actually did start to bring that up almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much they look alike. I don't know what their hairstyles are or whatever, but she
I think they look also
a postal.
Exactly. Employee. Yeah, I think they look enough alike that it's definitely not like outside of the realm of possibility.
Okay. Especially on a assuming this is like a doorbell camera or some
exactly quality. Yeah, and I've seen the video, and we'll have the video up on our blog so you guys can watch it too, but yeah, it's not
like it clearly shows her face.
No, not her face at all. No.
Okay.
So yes, like I said, I don't know if that's what Karen was thinking or all that was in her mind was that like, this is not my daughter. So Karen called investigators to share her concerns and received a shocking response. They told her that they knew it wasn't Kiara on the video, but told Karen not to tell anyone that it wasn't her.
Because it's generating interest in the case?
Maybe. I don't know. And I'm like, yeah, I have no idea. Because so apparently it actually was not some like conspiracy or like plan or anything. It was just another Black female postal worker who lived on the same street.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So total coincidence. They found her, they interviewed her, and she was like, oh yeah, no, I live right there. That's me. I was on my way to work.
But they didn't want Karen to say anything. And I would assume it's because it's getting media attention and it's getting interest in the case.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Like, I don't
know. Why else would you say that?
Well, no, and that's, I don't know. I mean, it's so interesting to me. And Karen was obviously taken aback by this. But, you know, she was also a mother desperate to find her daughter. So, like, she kept quiet. She did what they said because she was afraid of messing the case up. And so, yeah, I don't know why. I mean, to me, like, that does make sense that it is generating interest. It's, you know, helping.
Right. And if you come out and say, well, that wasn't actually her, and then they run a news report on that, then they're left with nobody knows when the last time
right.
was that she was seen. So,
but like, you know what I mean? it seems dangerous to me that, like, there's just that wrong information out there. Because, like, what if something happened to her on October 2nd, the day before this? And somebody saw something, but they're like, well, she was seen on October 3rd. So whatever I saw on the 2nd doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, you know? I see that point also, but I also see using that footage to gain more interest in the case publicly.
Yeah.
But you're right. I see your point as well. I don't know. It's all hypothetical. What I was saying was just a guess on why they would say something like that.
Yeah, no, I know. But because they have not given that reasoning publicly at all. And I'll get to that a little bit later. So Karen did keep the information to herself for the most part. I mean, she like told, again, the rest of the family and things like that. So like the people who are close to them, who were close to Karen, knew that that wasn't her, but it's not something that they went public with. So again, to this day, you know, in early 2022, most of the news articles like have still not been corrected. They still say she was last seen on video October 3rd. So the family kept searching, and when days turned into weeks with no sign of Kiara, her father, Joseph Coles, quit his job in Racine and traveled down to Chicago to aid in the search. For a time, he lived in his car, which he parked in front of Kiara's apartment building, and spent his days handing out flyers and searching abandoned buildings himself.
Wow.
Yeah, like breaking down like plywood over the windows and like going in. Because his theory was that she was being held somewhere.
Okay.
Since the family knew that Kiara was not on that surveillance footage from October 3rd, they took it upon themselves to call the post office where she worked to see if they could get more information about why she called into work that day. They didn't find out much, but they were able to speak with the person who said that they took the call. And they said that it was Kiara on the other end of the phone.
And this is on the 3rd?
Yes.
Okay.
Like the morning of the 3rd.
Yeah.
But we don't have any publicly available information, like cell phone records, to back that up. I mean, we don't know if that call came from Kiara's cell phone or not. So, like, personally, I'm not convinced that it was her.
Right. But we have her phone, right? Not we. Police have her phone.
Yeah, I mean, the family had it, so I'm assuming, yes, that they gave it to the police.
Yeah, so one would assume that the police ran the phone records and
right.
everything, so, although you could do that without the actual physical phone, but
yeah, exactly.
Regardless.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm sure they did all that. They just have been pretty tight-lipped about aspects like that. Interestingly, one thing that I learned is that though most postal employees do use the traditional voice option to call in sick, there's also an automated way to do it in which you just use your keypad and type in your employee ID.
Dude, I want that.
I know. So you don't actually have to like talk to anyone.
Yes.
I know. Isn't that the best?
Yeah. It's
yeah.
terrible.
I remember like, so one of the first podcasts I ever listened to like 15 years ago was Kevin Smith's podcast, and his dad was a postal worker. And he used to talk about like how he would always get like him or like his wife or somebody to call in for him. He never wanted to do it himself. And he would call in like all the time because he hated his job so much. Now, with the USPS, you can also choose when you're making these calls what type of leave you're taking. So either annual, sick, or unpaid leave. And we don't know which one Kiara chose. I don't know if that's relevant. I don't know at all. I just think that it would be interesting, again, to have more information on this. By October 18th, the U.S. Postal Inspection Service joined the Chicago PD and launched a joint investigation into Kiara's disappearance. Prior to this, the employees of the post office where she worked had been assisting with handing out flyers and things of that nature. Mac Julian, a member of the Letter Carriers Union, told reporters, quote, "We're not going to sit idly by, and we're not going to rest until we find our sister," end quote. And I guess maybe we should take a brief second, because I'm sure international people don't know this, and I'm sure a lot of like Americans don't know this, but the United States Postal Service does have an investigative agency. And are they actual police officers? Are they like federal law enforcement?
Yep.
They have like guns and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's... Because I remember there was an incident at a post office near us, and there's like a shooting, and one of the federal postal inspectors shot somebody, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember the particulars of that case, but sure. Postal inspectors are a real thing, and it's actually quite a coveted position within federal law enforcement, mostly because it's easy.
Yeah, but it is real. So, again, that just might be confusing when you're like, oh, the postal, like, they're helping with the investigation. It's like, no, that's like a real thing.
Yeah, no, they're legitimate investigators.
Yeah.
They go to, you know, criminal investigative school. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And most of the time, that's not an entry-level position.
Right.
It's actually a pretty difficult job to get.
Yeah. So just again, just to kind of clear that up. On October 19th, Chicago police officially said that they suspected foul play in Kiara's disappearance, telling the Associated Press, quote, based on the length of time of Kiara Coles' disappearance and the fact that she has fallen off the grid, police suspect possible foul play, end quote. The community held searches for Kiara, but there's absolutely no sign of the missing woman. Okay, but let's get back really quick to this video surveillance, that October 3rd video. After keeping the fact that it wasn't her daughter on that video to herself for years, Karen started giving interviews in February of 2021 and told reporters that it was not her daughter. In an interview with NBC5 Chicago, Karen said, quote, now I have nothing to lose. I mean, it's been 2 years and you, investigators, have came up with nothing, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame her. Like I said, the initial sound of it, it sounded like they were trying to use it to bring attention to the case because it was getting media attention with that video. But yeah, it's a couple of years.
Exactly. Like, so yeah. So like, what's the purpose of holding that information back? And to her credit, that interview, I mean, it led to a new round of news articles about Kiara's disappearance.
Yeah.
So even though to our knowledge, there is no video of Kiara Coles on October 3rd, 2018, there is video of her from the night before, on Tuesday, October 2nd. Karen told NBC5 that another neighbor showed her a video of Kiara and Josh leaving her apartment together on October 2nd and then driving off in separate cars. Now, the neighbor did also turn this footage over to police. So this isn't something that, like, just Karen had or anything like that.
Right.
Detectives told Karen that that evening, Kiara had gone to an ATM and withdrawn $400 from her account and handed it over to Josh. So this information came, you know, I'm going to assume back in 2018 during the initial investigation when they, of course, like ran all of her credit cards and things like that and saw that she had a hit at this ATM. They then pulled the footage from that ATM and saw Kiara and Josh at the ATM. So that's where we're getting that information.
Okay.
And like that part, which I had never heard about, because I mean, I've been pretty familiar with this case, not like all of the details, but like that part really got to me. Because again, like the ATM withdrawal, like the boyfriend, like it just made me think of Akia.
Yeah.
Akia was a young woman who had gotten pregnant by an older man who was already in a relationship with another woman and had kids with her. She was last seen withdrawing money from different ATMs before seemingly disappearing into thin air, just like Kiara. And unfortunately, that's not where the similarities stop. In Akia's case, her boyfriend, Michael, didn't join any searches for the mother of his child. He didn't hand out flyers. He didn't talk to press or the family. And he eventually left the state. Josh Simmons did the exact same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
With Kiara?
Uh-huh. Like Michael, Josh was interviewed by police early on, but that was it. He never assisted in any searches for Kiara, nor did he speak publicly about her. Then, soon after her disappearance, he and Kiara both quit their jobs at the Postal Service and moved out of state. In their case, to Louisiana. While Kiara's case did get a ton of attention in the beginning, it just kind of dropped off, you know, as any case does when it doesn't get solved. Though police said that they had 2 to 3 persons of interest in early 2019, the investigation pretty much died after that. With no real leads and no arrests, Chicago PD classified the case as suspended in July of 2020.
What does that mean?
That means that basically they're not investigating it anymore. It's not closed because she hasn't been found, but it's basically like, unless we get something big, nobody's working on this. Oh, and Karen says that like detectives won't call her back.
Well, there's probably not a detective assigned.
She can't get anybody to call her back.
I don't understand the need for that classification. I mean, why
maybe it was their way of saying, stop calling me because we're not doing anything about it.
but why wouldn't you at least transfer it over to a cold case detective? And like, I get it that there might not be any new leads or whatever, but at least you've got somebody assigned to it.
Well, yeah. And my sincere hope right now is that Chicago PD looks at, again, Akia Eggleston's case, right? Because that case went cold. Baltimore PD was doing nothing with that case for years. And it wasn't until the last 6 months, and Marilyn Mosby even said that in the press conference,
right,
that it was the last 6 months that they decided to start working on this, although she, you know, tried to paint that in like a rah-rah Baltimore PD kind of way.
Sure.
But 6 months that they decided to start working on this. And what did they do? They re-interviewed Michael Robinson. They re-interviewed Michael Robinson's girlfriend. They re-interviewed his brother. They re-interviewed all of these people who were there, who right. knew these people, who right. knew the players involved, who knew the circumstances, who knew the relationships. And, they started finding things out, and they started finding out information that allowed them to build a case. You know, part of what led to an arrest in Akia's case, and again, I know we're like talking a lot about Akia, and this was not the plan when I wrote this episode. I only mentioned her briefly, but then again, we had an arrest like right before we recorded this. So, you know, I think it's just very important to talk about, because that's what happened when you keep the pressure on these cases. This yes. is what happens when you talk about them.
Yes.
And, you know, these investigative agencies realize that they can't just let it go, that people aren't going to just let it go, you know?
Right. And it's, I'm dumbfounded by the fact that they listed the case as suspended instead of just saying we're giving it to a cold case detective. And like, even that is better than just saying, nah, it's on a shelf.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is that? But more importantly, people need to keep the pressure up on missing persons cases. It's the only way things are going to get looked at closer is if there's pressure from the public, not just on the police. Put the pressure on your elected officials. That's the only way there's going to get movement on this.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the case against Michael Robinson was built based on his internet usage, his Google search history, his Facebook Messenger messages, all of these things, right? They were able to get a digital trail and help build this case, along with, again, re-interviewing all of these people, because they interviewed him several more times and he was completely contradicting himself in every interview. And again, I'm not trying to say that Josh Simmons is guilty. I do not know. However, he needs to be looked at. He needs to be talked to. His associates need to be talked to. If his internet search history hasn't been pulled, like, whatever can be pulled needs to be pulled. Like, there are more things that can be done in this case.
Yeah. I mean, here, the last actual known footage is her taking money out of an ATM with Josh there. And the only thing that was missing from her purse was her wallet.
Right. So her debit card was there, interestingly, although I don't know if that's the same debit card, because like I have more than one debit card.
Sure.
So I have no idea it's the same debit card. But yes, you're right. Her wallet, cash, yeah, missing.
And the last known person to see her was Josh.
Mm-hmm. I've been talking a little bit with a few members of Akia's family over the past week since this news broke, and they never gave up searching. You know, they always, of course, hoped that she and her baby were out there somewhere. And unfortunately, that doesn't look to be the case. And Kiara's family is, of course, in the exact same boat. Much like Akia's family felt throughout their entire ordeal, Kiara's family now feels as though they're on their own. They still continue to search for her. They refuse to give up hope. Karen told Fox 32 on what would have been her daughter's 29th birthday, quote, "Until the detectives or police tell me to come identify a body, to me she's alive. End quote.
Who could we tell our listeners to reach out to put some pressure on them?
I would think at this point, just sharing her story on social media as much as possible. They could reach out to Chicago PD, maybe.
I don't know how receptive the actual police department would be.
Well, no, I don't think so either. I don't think they're going to be receptive at all. But, I mean, maybe if you publicly kind of put them on blast a little bit. Again, I think the more that people just talk about it, the more that it remains part of the societal conversation, the more possibility we have of getting movement on this. Because, you know, again, that's what we saw with Akia. She was featured in the Black and Missing Foundation documentary on HBO. She was featured in People magazine. And Kiara has also gotten a good amount of coverage. But again, cases get colder and colder. Coverage goes down and down and down. And in her case, it's been over 3 years. There haven't been any really new breaks in the case other than Karen going and telling people last year that it wasn't Kiara on the video. But like I said, I mean, that's not something that even got that widely reported. So a lot of people still don't even know that. A lot of people still think that, like, she was seen on video.
All right, listeners, well, that's your task. Share this episode.
Yeah, and just
push it to other podcasts, push it to news agencies, whoever you can. Get her story out.
Yeah, and, you know, again, so we'll share stuff on our socials and everything, of course, in our website. You know, we're going to be sharing this episode. Get her poster, share it, you know, any true crime groups that you're in on, like, Facebook or whatever. Like, share, just keep it alive, because this one, there's just so much more that it seems that there could be done on this case. And, you know, Chicago PD, again, suspended it. So it's not even me just saying, oh, they're not doing anything on this case. They're saying they're not doing anything on this case.
It still blows my mind. Suspended. I've never even heard of that. I mean, inactive, cold, whatever, but it's suspended, meaning that it's literally just sitting on a shelf.
And interestingly, like, they're just being very cagey with what they have and haven't done in the case. And I get that, obviously, to a point, because, you know, you don't want to put your whole investigation out there. And I'm not saying that she
right.
should.
Especially, you know, if
that they should.
If they find a body, like, then it turns into a murder investigation. And if a lot of that information is out there in the public, then it could lead to problems with the prosecution.
Yeah, and so I get that. However, when Karen went to the news stations and said, like, hey, yeah, no, that's not my daughter on the tape, and detectives told me that wasn't my daughter on the tape, reporters, of course, went to Chicago PD and asked them about that, and they wouldn't confirm it. They wouldn't confirm whether or not it was her on the tape. They're just like, oh, yeah, well,
years later, like, why is that piece at that point?
Exactly. They would just say, oh, we think we know what her timeline was, but wouldn't confirm that it wasn't her on the tape in 2021.
See, okay, but that's another thing that doesn't make sense to me. If you think you know the timeline of a disappearance, that's not going to hinder a prosecution for a murder case later.
It's going to help people who saw something come forward.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the part that I feel like when a person goes missing, you can pretty much safely put out.
Yeah.
Because that's going to help you find something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the person, but a lot more clues.
We cannot let Kiara be forgotten. Her case can be solved. And we need to keep attention on it in order to make sure law enforcement knows that they can't just put this in a file cabinet somewhere. So, like we said, please share Kiara's story and let her family know that we still remember her. We still remember her baby. And we want justice for both of them. Thank you. Coles has been missing from Chicago, Illinois since October 2nd, 2018. She's a black female, and at the time of her disappearance, she was 5'4" and 125 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. She has several tattoos, including a heart on her left hand, the phrase Lucky Libra on her back, a jaguar's head on the back of her shoulder, words including the phrase Love My in a design on her chest, and words on her wrist. Kiara was 26 when she went missing, and she would be 29 today. Kiara's baby was due on April 23rd, 2019. Anyone who has any information on Kiara Coles' disappearance, please call the U.S. Postal Inspection Service at 877-876-2455 and provide a case identification number 269-3502-WPV or call the Chicago Police Special Victims Unit at 312-747-8274. You can see all of the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!